care of our gas and maybe a little bit of food this week. So y'all throw some money in there or write a check or do something. All right. So we'll take care of her, and I know the Lord will. Let's talk about this. All right. I went down for a D-Now in Georgia at Mount Rachel back in the spring. If y'all know, Chris McDaniels goes to church there. He worships there, and we do a lot of things together. And we go down there, and the youth was amazing down there. The classes were amazing. Everything was great. But I met this person named Jordan Green. And when you go do these things, you kind of meet people that kind of stand out to you. But she really stood out because she's so real. Really real with our youth, really real with her people and her church. And I even watched, like, on Sunday morning, I'm like one of those part kind of pay attention to how everything she goes through and just loves on the people in her church, right? Her dad was a pastor there for quite a few years, and I just watched her, and I was like, man, I'm very impressed with her spirit, which is a godly spirit, and number two, just how real she is with people. So it was an awesome opportunity. I told her, I said, we're going to do something. I don't know what the future looks like. And then God put it on my heart to have her come and share her testimony. Our girls who went down there just loved her, and she loved on them, so I said, I got to get an opportunity to get her back up here to see them at least. And then it kind of worked out for this. So we're just going to turn this over to her. And I'll be honest with you, I do this a lot. I tell people to come, and then I don't even have a clue what they're going to do. So it's kind of dangerous. I'm like, you know, because my wife's like, what's she going to do? She's going to preach? I'm like, well, I don't know. I didn't think about that. But anyway, she's like, you know, but she's going to come give her testimony. And I'm sure the Lord's going to use it in a big way. So, Jordan, you come and just mind the Lord.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. So my name is Jordan Green. Some of you I know, and it like thrilled my heart that I was going to get to see you. Like when I got off the plane in Africa, I was like, I get to see my girls in like 3 days, and I was pumped about it. And some of you I don't know, but what I do know is that I'm so excited to be here tonight. I think it's such a privilege, and I truly appreciate the honor of speaking at your church. So like I said, I just got back from Africa like super late Saturday night, early Sunday morning. And Sunday, it was one of those like, you know, there's a 4-hour time change. I traveled for 36 hours. The jet lag was real, and I don't think I left my bed Sunday. And so Monday, I started coming into the world, and I was like, I should probably do laundry and clean my house. And I was like, and you know, I don't know what I'm going to talk about tonight. And so I was doing laundry, and I was just kind of asking the Lord. I was like, you know, what are you wanting from me? What do you want me to share? And this past Africa trip for me, it was my fifth trip there. And it was one of those trips where all of the things that the Lord either spoke to me or showed me or just planted a seed in me about, it was just so much. I came back home and I was just very overwhelmed with a lot of things. And I came back home with more questions than I had answers. And, you know, that can be very frustrating. To everywhere you see, there just be questions where nothing is certain and everything seems very up in the air and the path just isn't very clear. And it wasn't until I sat down and really started thinking about what the Lord wanted me to share that he shined a light on my path just a little bit. Our devotion over there was on Joseph, and it was one of the easiest devotions I think I've ever done, and at the same time, one of the most profound devotions I think I've ever done. I'm going to pause my Africa story for just a second, so remember that. We're going to pick it back up in a minute. But I kind of want to tell you a little bit of background about me and what my life has been like for the past year and a half. So 20 years ago, my family moved from Dalton, Georgia. I'm originally from Bristol, Tennessee, and that's where all my family still is. We're big Vols fans. Go Vols. My dad moved to Dalton so that he could be a youth pastor, and then 2 years later, he took over as the head pastor position. And for the last 20 years, my life has been defined as a preacher's kid. But more specifically, my life has been defined as Brother Marty Green's daughter. You see, everyone knew me by that title, and it was very much a part of my identity and who I was. Everyone in Dalton knows my dad, and even if they didn't know me, when I said my last name, they're like, oh, you're Marty's daughter. You know, the last 20 years of my life have also been defined by the church. My family was involved in everything. My dad was the pastor. My mom was the children's minister. I was involved in the youth. My mom and grandmother did Wednesday night meals. I did children's choir. Like, you name it, we were involved. I don't know why we just didn't have, like, beds in the church, because I swear we lived there. And while it was a lot, I loved that. I absolutely loved ministering and serving with my family. And everything we did with a goal in mind of loving God's people and winning His people for the lost. In the last 20 years, it also granted me so many gifts. You know, when I moved to Dalton, I was 8 years old. We didn't know a soul. I had no friends and no family. And at 8 years old, that can be pretty devastating and kind of earth-shattering. And you know, 20 years later, it's been 21 years now, I look back and I have more grandparents than I know what to do with. If I ever get married, my grandparents coming down the aisle is going to take a solid 20 minutes because I have like 12 different ones and I love it. Christmas is amazing. You should totally get more grandparents. And I also have more friends than I know what to do with. I've been so blessed there. The people at Mount Rachel have become my family and the family that I never knew I needed, and I pray I always get to keep. And I love being a part of the pastoral family, and even more, I loved how close my family was and how much we loved serving God with each other. In January of 2020, my dad's dad was on his way to the emergency room, and we all just thought it was kidney stones. I mean, he was in a lot of pain, and we hated that. But kidney stones, that's doable. That's fixable. And so when he was there, they did several tests, and we learned that he had a mass in his liver. A couple days later, they did more tests and more scans, and we found out that he had stage 4 liver cancer, and it had spread all over his body. And we found that out on January 6th. On March 10th, my grandfather passed away. And you know, the 2 months in between his diagnosis and his death were very hard for my family. And it wasn't just because, you know, my grandfather was very sick and we were losing a patriarch of our family. It was also because my grandfather owned a seafood business, and it's something he started in 1979, and he had built it up to this massive empire. And it's very funny. You know, Bristol is landlocked. There ain't an ocean nowhere near. And this man had made it to where he delivered to 5 states and cities on the coast because everything he got was just the best. And my father grew up working in that store and working with his dad. And so for January and February, he was driving back and forth to Tennessee twice a week, which is like a 3-hour trip for us in Dalton, 3.5, running the store for my grandfather, and then preaching on Wednesdays and Sundays. And that was just a very tiring time for us, a very stressful time for us. At the end of February, when my grandfather's sickness kind of took over, my grandfather approached my dad with a question, statement, however you want to look at it. And he was like, you know, Marty, I really want somebody in our family to take over this business. And what I didn't know at that time was the Lord had been slowly preparing my dad's heart for a move. Although, I'm not going to lie, none of us thought it was Bristol. Because if I'll just be honest with you, moving back home, and we love home and we love our family, but that wasn't on our wish list. That's something that we never really wanted to do. We loved where we were and we loved the people and the family that, you know, we had gained. And it's not something we ever really wanted to do. But you know, sometimes the Lord calls you to things that aren't on your wish list and things that you don't really want to do. And so after a whole lot of prayer and being still in the Lord's presence, my parents decided to follow the Lord's call, and they resigned from Mount Rachel and moved back to Bristol, Tennessee. And you know, I'll never forget the Sunday that my dad told the church. And I hadn't really thought about how you would describe it until I was writing this. And I think the best way I could describe it to you is if you can imagine being present for when the doctors come out to tell your family that you've passed, and then being present at your own funeral. Because that Sunday, instead of being, you know, a body in a casket, I was tangibly standing on the stage with my family when my dad told the church that we'd been at for 20 years. And you could feel the hush fall over the crowd, and you could see the faces and hear the gasp. And then I was tangibly standing in the foyer of our church when every single member, hundreds of them, one by one, came and hugged our necks. And you had to take in every single face of hurt, of confusion, of sadness. And you know, I don't think that's a funeral I ever want to attend again or wish on anyone for that matter. A few weeks after we told the church, the pandemic hit, and while that was a big tragedy for our family, it kind of worked out. I'm a teacher. I could go and teach remotely. I could travel with my dad and help him kind of juggle the business and the church. And we did that until the very beginning of June, and the very beginning of June was my dad's last Sunday there. In those next 2 months, I was faced with a big decision, right? So I could follow my parents back home to Bristol, which we know is not on my wish list in any way, shape, or form. I could stay in Dalton, where all my people are, but now my people aren't there anymore. Or, you know, I could branch out. And my mom had asked me, you know, hey, have you thought about moving closer to your brother? My brother just graduated from UGA, but he was a senior there at the time. And she was like, you know, you could really be a hub for him if he ever needs somebody. And so I prayed about it, and I made the decision to move to Marietta, Georgia, and accept a teaching position there. So to sum up that, like, grand chapter of my life that I'm just so glad I lived through, not only had I just lost my grandfather, I had lost my family, I lost my home, I mean, our dream home, it's the home, you know, my mom always wanted. I lost my job and the wonderful people that I worked with. I lost my friends, I lost my church. I tell everybody I kind of feel like I was in a divorce because I even lost my dog in this divorce and he went to Bristol with my family. And then, you know, probably the most important, I lost who I was. I lost every single thing that I thought defined who Jordan Green was. You know, every single aspect of my entire life was changed. There wasn't one part of me that wasn't affected by their decision to move. And I struggled with a very long time for being very hurt and just very mad at the Lord. And, you know, I had to learn sometimes it's okay to be mad at the Lord. He's a really big God, and he can take all of your emotions. And when I first moved to Marietta, there was lots of nights where I would, you know, just cry myself to sleep and just had a hard time because the cherry on top of this situation is I moved to a brand new city in the middle of a pandemic where you're going to meet no one, right? We're working from home, church is online. So there I was, just completely and utterly alone. So now let's flip back to my Africa trip. My time in Africa was absolutely wonderful. Y'all, it's the hottest I've ever been, but I would do it all again. It is, you can't even really know until you go just how cool and awesome it is to serve the Lord, especially to people who've never heard the word before. I never thought I'd be given the chance to go again, not just with my church, but with my dad. And so when that opportunity presented itself, when the mission team got together and they're like, you know, Pastor Marty, we would love for you to come with us. This was his 28th trip. I leaped at that and I grabbed hold of it with everything inside of me. The villages we visit in West Africa are the most pure, joyful places, even though they have nothing and they live in mud huts. They are so full of joy, and it's so amazing to experience that. And when you're out in the villages, and even really in Africa for that matter, you're very disconnected from the world. And I think it's in those times when you're disconnected and you're out of touch with certain things that you're so connected to the Lord and His Spirit on such a deeper level. And I think that's because my whole reason for being there was for Him, right? He was my sole mission. So I'd wake up in the morning and I would think, okay, Lord, you know, help me see what you want to see today. Help me to see the big things and the small things. Put the right words in me. If it's with my, you know, somebody on my team who may be struggling or somebody in the village, you're living this whole life of intention where everything you do is about the calling of God that He's placed in our lives. And that's not just here or there. That's here too, right? He's placed that on all of our lives as Christians of spreading the good word and loving His people. And I think when you live that life of intention, you can hear Him just a little bit deeper and a little bit clearer. So over there, we do these devotions every morning. And it's a great opportunity for us because while we've been there since 2006, I think was the first time, we've had some converts. And that's a big deal over there. They're very persecuted for, you know, changing to the Christian faith. And so they'll come with us to Bible study, and then that's a time for them, or maybe they have a friend that's open or questioning. Well, then they can bring them to the white people's Bible study, right? So then they're protected. But they get to hear the word, and they get to ask questions. And it's been such a ministry tool in our time there. And our whole devotion this time was on Joseph. And it started out, it asked us this question, and I was like, oh man, this is such a good question. And I took it a little bit farther, and I'll explain to you in just a second. It asked the question, have you ever been in one of those situations where you're going through something extremely difficult, or you've been given earth-shattering news, and that one person, y'all, there is always one person, that comes up to you, and they don't even get out the, I'm so sorry, I'm praying for you. None of that comes out. Their first words are, oh, it's going to be all right. You're going to get through it. God's going to use it for good. And you know, and I know I'm not the only one, you want to punch that person in the face. And you're like, how dare you, right? How dare you come at me with such honesty and speak such promise into something that is such a tragedy in my life? You know, when you're in the middle of a massive tragedy in a pit so deep and so dark that you can't climb out of. And that's exactly where we find Joseph in Genesis chapter 37, is in a pit. Verses 23 through 25 read, "So it came to pass when Joseph had come to his brothers that they stripped Joseph of his tunic, the tunic of many colors that was on him. Then they took him and cast him into a pit. The pit was empty, there was no water, and they sat down to have a meal." Now I want you to picture for a moment that you're Joseph. You're 17 years old. You've just been thrown into a massive hole in the ground, y'all. Massive hole. You can't get out of it. Your voice is probably hoarse and sore because you've been screaming for help. The dirt on the ground around you is probably wet where you've just been crying in anguish. And one thing that the devotion stops to pick up on is in the middle of all of that, and all of that screaming and crying and not knowing how to get out of the pit, his brothers are sitting right out there having lunch, right? Hearing him plead. On later in chapter 42, it talks about that his brothers saw the anguish of his soul when he was in the pit, and they heard the pleading. And you know, I thought about it, and it kind of made me laugh. Joseph's family was really kind of like a modern-day reality TV show, right? Instead of Keeping Up with the Kardashians, you have Keeping Up with the Sons of Jacob, where you have all these brothers who are a hot mess, and all of them hate one. And they are so jealous and so envious of Joseph because Joseph was dad's favorite, right? He got all the new clothes while the other brothers got hand-me-downs. He got to stay at home with dad in the cool. I'm sure they didn't have air conditioning, but it had to be cooler than being out in the fields and working where the brothers were. He got treated as a firstborn, even though he was way down on the totem pole. And the brothers couldn't stand the sight of him. So they caught him miles away from home and miles away from his father's protection. And it was there that they attacked him. And their attack, it caught Joseph very off guard. And I think we can all relate to the fact that when we've been attacked, and maybe you're being attacked right now, is it caught you very off guard. Mine caught me very off guard. You know, for Joseph, his attack came in the form of a pit. But maybe yours came in the form of a job loss or a diagnosis, a family tragedy, you know, trouble with friends, relationship issues, whatever it may be. And so Joseph was thrown in a hole and despised. And, you know, in my life, I was thrown into a sea of loneliness where I just kept being beat with waves of abandonment. And that was my pit. And, you know, it's really hard to get out of a pit. And the thing about Joseph's story is he got out of that pit. But it didn't get much easier for Joseph when he got out. It got a whole lot worse before it got a whole lot better. You know, he was sold into slavery, and he was imprisoned, and he was lied about and mistreated, and he was just surrounded with so many broken promises. And yet, through all of that, he never gave up hope. By the end of his story, Joseph was the second most powerful man in all of his land. You know, Genesis goes on to tell us in chapter 50, verse 20, it says, "You meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, in order to bring about this present result to preserve many people alive." You know, in God's hands, intended evil, and in only God's hands, can intended evil become eventual good. And I want to point out that word eventual. The Lord can totally take your present horrible, bad circumstance and change it in an instant. But sometimes that word eventual is very real in your life, where it takes a little bit to get to that and to see what the Lord is up to. And I think Joseph tied himself to that promise and held on for dear life. You know, throughout Joseph's life, he experienced pain after pain, and every single time, God redeemed that pain. He took his torn robe and exchanged it for a royal one. The pit became a palace. His broken family grew old together. And all these various acts intended to destroy God's servant, God used to strengthen him and use him. God is the master weaver of our lives, and nothing escapes his reach. You know, Satan will weave things in our life, and it's so cool to watch how God takes that and he just reweaves. You know, Satan's goal in life in Joseph's life was very simple. He wanted to destroy the seed of Abraham, right? That's Jesus' lineage. And so it seemed all hell was out to get Joseph and his brothers and destroy that. But it's so cool to watch God at work. He looked at all that Satan had done, and he cleared the debris, and he stabled the structure, and he bolted the trestles until that chaos became a time of triumph. And the verse we read just a few moments ago, verse 20 in chapter 50, the very end of it, it says, "For life of many people." And that was the great triumph in Joseph's life. You know, part of Joseph's whole story is the fact that because of his time in the pit and trial after trial after trial, he saved an entire people group. Don't forget that he was the one who helped say, hey, here's how we're going to deal with the famine, and here's how we're going to feed everybody. You know, God redeemed Joseph's story, and he can redeem yours as well. It kind of brings me back to that person that we all want to punch in the face that tells us, you're going to get through this in the hard times. I think part of the reason we get so mad at that person is because in that moment, we don't think we're going to get through it. We live in that fear that we're never going to make it out of the pit. And that pain will never leave. And all you can see is surrounded by the steep walls of this giant pit on every side with angry brothers eating lunch on the outside. And we can't help but ask ourselves, you know, God, am I ever going to get out of this pit? And that answer is yes, and we see that time and time again in the Bible, right? Daniel gets out of the lion's den, Peter gets out of prison, Jonah gets out of the belly of the whale, and Lazarus escapes the grave. God will get you through the pit. You know, God loves the word through the Red Sea, through the wilderness, and through the valley of the shadow of death. He loves that word, and that's a promise I think we can cling to. But you know, that doesn't always mean it's going to be painless, or that you won't cry anymore, that you received the last bad news. It might be really quick. That eventual might be, whoop, it's over and done. Or it could be like Joseph. You know, it was over 20 years before Joseph was redeemed and restored with his family, and that relationship was good. You know, and we can ask, how long is God going to take with each one of us? And you know, it could be that he's going to take his sweet time. But the cool thing about God is his history isn't redeemed in minutes, but it's redeemed in lifetimes. And God will use your mess for good. What we see as a perfect hot mess, which in my life is literally every day, it's a perfect hot mess. God sees to use for something, right? What we see as famine, God sees as the relocation of a chosen lineage. We may call it Egypt when we're reading the story, but God sees it as protective custody. We see Satan's tricks and ploys, and God sees Satan tripped and foiled. You know, every single one of us in here are Josephs in our own life. You're your own Joseph in your generation at this point in time. You present a challenge to Satan because God has equipped you with something that this world so desperately needs that only you have. And so Satan, he'll stop at nothing to destroy us. What Satan means for evil, God, the master, weaver, and builder, will redeem for good in our life. You know, I think if we could ask Joseph right now, he would tell us that the pit, it pretty much stinks. It's not a very good time. Probably wouldn't wish it on anybody. But the cool thing about being in a pit way down in the ground is that it forces us to do a couple of things. You know, it forces you to look up. You realize that when you're way down there in a pit, someone from up there must come down here and give you a hand. And God did that for Joseph. At the right time and in the right way, he will do that for you and I. You know, we can't always see what he's doing. And that's hard. But what we can do is assume that he is up to something that is good. And we can tie ourselves to that promise and hang on for dear life with it. You know, being in the pit is hard. Because when you're in the pit, everywhere you turn, it looks like there's no way out. Because you and I are so bad to look at what's right in front of our faces. We're just turning around and around in this pit or looking down at the ground. But if we could ever just remember to stop and look up and look at the light that's coming in at the top of the pit and remember that God is with you in your crisis. I think that's one of the biggest things I got out of this study, was that I have to remember in those dark times to look up. And I think the second was being that, you know, when Joseph got out of the pit, it wasn't much easier for him. It was honestly a lot harder, and it wasn't very fair. He had trial after trial after trial in his life. But the cool thing about Joseph is he never wavered. And I think he learned something in that pit that some of us never do in this life. And that's something that is found in James chapter 1, verses 2 through 3. And these are very well-read verses, but I'm going to read them real quick. It says, "Consider it a great joy, my brothers, when you experience various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance. But endurance must do its complete work, so that you may be mature and complete, lacking nothing." You know, I think Joseph would tell you there's three things you need to know about trials. And the first is to expect. Verse 2 tells us that you're going to have trials. It says, whenever you face trials of many kind. That word whenever, that's just an emphasis of the word when. So you better just go ahead and buckle up and brace for it, because trials are going to come your way. And so that's what Joseph or James is saying right here first, is you need to expect them. And I think Joseph got that. You know, I should probably expect these trials. The second thing that happens is not only should we expect trials, but we need to endure trials. Verses 3 and 4 say, "Knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance, but endurance must do its complete work so that you may be mature and complete, lacking nothing." You know, God is after our maturity. And enduring these trials, every time you go through one, it brings you closer and closer to the Lord. And it changes things about you, and it tweaks things about you. And that's God forming you and shaping you and maturing you into who He needs you to be. So first, we expect trials. Second, we endure trials. And the last thing is probably the hardest, and that's to enjoy trials. You know, verse 2 says to consider it all joy. There's some versions that use the word to count. Count it all joy. You know, count is a financial term. It means to evaluate. And what James is encouraging us to do is to evaluate the way that we look at trials. You know, you and I get to choose. That's one of the cool things about God, is we're all given a choice about a whole lot of things. And so when it comes to trials, He gives us the choice. He says, you know, you can see it as an asset, as something that's valuable and useful in your life, as something that I'm going to use. Or you can see it as a liability. And so we get to choose. So when it comes to trials, you have to expect, endure, and enjoy. You know, looking back at the past year and a half of my life, it was very clear and very easy to see when I was in that pit of darkness. When I was surrounded and defeated with no way out, and I was just screaming in the deepness of the dark. When I had lost my family and my purpose and my identity. But you know, I can also see when I chose to look up. When I chose to look up to Christ and release my hand. You know, when you're in the pit, if you think about it, a lot of times we're like this because we're mad or we don't understand or we're just in this position, right? Because it's something bad. But when you choose to look up and you take that fist formation and you thrust it up and you open up your hand, and you release it to the Lord, that's when you're making the choice of saying, you know what, God, I'm going to see this as an asset. I'm going to see this as you doing something good in my life. That's when you're saying, you know what, I'm going to count it all for the joy. You know, I can look back now, and I see so much of the how and the why of the things that have came to be in my life. I see how so much goodness has come from such a very hard time in my family's life, how our separation and relocation has been used to further the Lord's kingdom and love on a whole lot of people. You know, when you're a pastor's family, you spend so much time loving others. And I didn't know that I needed a year away in Marietta, Georgia, to be loved on by these people who didn't know me, never met me, and poured into me and loved on me in ways I will never be able to express gratitude. And I think the Lord knew that I needed that personally and other people as well. You know, it can be really hard when you're in those dark moments, those moments when it's hard to choose to see the situation as an asset, as something that is good for you. I look back at Joseph's life one more time. You know, it's so easy. We have the whole story, right? We can flip real fast and be like, oh, whew, it's fine, guys. He's going to be second in command. Don't worry. And then go back and finish the other chapters. But you and I don't get to do that. We have to live in the moment. And that's so hard. That is so hard. It's so cool that God took a spoiled little baby son like Joseph and matured him and grew him and strengthened him with so many trials to save the lives of so many. And everything that Satan meant for evil, God rewarded for his good. You know, Joseph did this, or God did this in Joseph's life, and he's done it in mine, and he's going to do it in yours as well. But that's all in how you view the pit and how you view the trials. So I just kind of want to take a moment. I'm just going to ask you to kind of close your eyes and bow your head. And I just want to give you a minute to kind of talk with the Lord. You know, maybe you're in the pit right now, and you are surrounded and in darkness, and you're struggling to take that action of looking up. And you know what? That is hard. It is so hard to look out of the pit and out of your situation, past all of that, and hand it over to the Lord. But God wants to use this for your good because he has plans for your life, and your life does not end in the pit. Or maybe you're out of the pit and we've made it out of the darkness, but it's trial after trial after trial. And instead of seeing it as an asset, we see it as a liability, as a disadvantage. And you know, I personally had to fall on my knees so many times and ask the Lord to help me to choose to see this bad thing as something that is an actual lot, as an actual asset that he wants to use in my life to make me more mature in my walk with him. Because, you know, he can use us to save an entire people group or whatever it is he's called you to do. Or maybe you're in the pit and you can't see out of the top and you can't see any light at all because you've never accepted Christ as your Lord and Savior. He is the only way and the only one who can reach down into that pit and pull you out. And if that's you, I can go ahead and tell you, your pastor would love to talk to you. He would love to tell you how to get that relationship with the Lord. And so I want to invite Pastor Kevin up to the front. And thank you so much for just letting me speak tonight.
If you're in that pit, if you're in that place, if you're in the place of trials, come, we'll pray with you. Pray for you. Somebody to help you.